This is an ABC podcast.
The party of Donald Trump, the Republicans, has lost the House of Representatives. They had held it for the last 8 years. And for Donald Trump personally, it means big trouble. When the Democrats take control of the House on the 3rd of January, they will also get subpoena power, meaning they can demand documents like Trump's tax returns.
The American people will see his tax returns, not because of any voyeuristic interest, but because they should know if he's corrupt.
Or subpoena witnesses to testify under oath on live TV. But while it might be good news for Democrats, the midterm elections may spell trouble for Robert Mueller and his investigation.
Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General of the United States, has submitted his letter of resignation. And Matt Whitaker, who is the current Chief of Staff to Jeff Sessions, is going to be the acting Attorney General.
At long last, Jeff Sessions, the beleaguered Attorney General, has been fired by the President. His temporary replacement, a guy who has called the Mueller probe a witch hunt and suggested that its budget should be cut to the bone. Buckle up. Things are going to get interesting. Emma Shortis is back. She is a research officer at the RMIT EU Centre. G'day, Emma.
Hi, Matt.
And Andrew Beattie is here too. He is news editor for AFP in Australia and a former White House correspondent. G'day, Andrew.
Hey.
Let's start by talking about the guy appointed to replace Jeff Sessions, Matthew Whitaker. Emma, has he been put in there to fire Robert Mueller?
I think that is entirely possible. By all accounts, he's a Trump loyalist. Trump really likes him. He likes his kind of commanding presence. He's an old football player, so he's a kind of big guy. And he's been very loyal to Trump. He's said the right things. As you said, he's suggested that the Mueller investigation shouldn't be investigating things like the Trump family finances. So I think Trump has appointed him because of that loyalty, and he will expect that loyalty to continue.
Whitaker has said in the past that he thinks maybe that firing Robert Mueller would be a bad idea, but you could just cut his budget so much that he can't do anything anymore. Do you think people would accept that, Andrew, if that's what ended up happening?
I think that Democrats in Congress certainly wouldn't accept that, and I think that some Republicans in Congress would not accept that either. But we still don't really know what, if any, red lines that some of the Republicans in the Senate in particular have in terms of, you know, what lines they wouldn't let Trump cross. To be perfectly honest, I don't see Whitaker trying to fire Mueller. I do see him trying to constrict Mueller significantly. You know, I can perfectly imagine that the funding is cut or that the mandate is very, very strictly interpreted. So I think, you know, what you're going to see perhaps over the next couple of months before the new Congress is sat on January the 3rd is kind of Trump testing the limits of what he can do with the Republican caucus. So I don't think you're going to see an all-out assault very quickly. I mean, he's going to have to move somewhat quickly because he's only got a couple of months.
Yeah, a little under 2 months, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think that you're going to see, you know, he's going to be a bit like a raptor at the gate in Jurassic Park, you know, just testing to see which bits of the fence work.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a very good, I like that metaphor. Emma, you know, do you think if he's going to cut Mueller's budget, do you think he might as well fire him? I mean, Mueller makes money for the US government. He repossessed $40 million worth of stuff from Paul Manafort, and his investigation hasn't reached $20 million yet. So do you think, you know, cutting his budget would be tantamount to firing him in the public's eyes?
Look, I think it would be pretty close. Reducing the budget so that he can't do anything. I mean, Mueller, as we've talked about, has got a lot of staff and they have to be paid. It costs money. I think that the messaging would be kind of difficult because, you know, he wouldn't technically be fired and he'd still be able to do some investigating. So it might be a kind of politically clever way of making the investigation going away or stymieing it. But I guess I'd kind of say to that I'm not sure that would be enough for Trump. It might stymie the investigation, it might make him feel better. But Trump doesn't kind of settle for half measures like that. I think Trump's wanted Mueller gone for a long time and probably won't settle until he is actually gone. And look, he may be able to do that if he can confirm an attorney general who's loyal and who's said that he would fire, he or she, it's probably going to be a he, would fire Mueller, then I think Trump will do that. I think he wants him gone. He's furious, he's resentful, and once Trump's kind of decided somebody's got to go, they generally go eventually.
Mm. I have this image in my head of Robert Mueller sitting there on his own in his office, surrounded by hundreds of boxes that he has to read himself. But, you know, as you mentioned there, Emma, you know, once Trump decides someone has to go, they generally go eventually. Andrew, were you surprised at the timing of Jeff Sessions' firing, that he's been kicked out the door the day after the midterms?
Shocked, but not surprised, I guess, as with everything in the Trump administration. Look, I think that the fact that Trump increased, or looks like he's increased his majority in the Senate, makes it a lot easier for him to confirm people to cabinet positions. So I think, you know, the likes of Sessions and Mattis were in much greater peril after the vote on Tuesday. I think in a way we're kind of getting one step ahead of ourselves, though, because it's not entirely clear that Whitaker won't have to recuse himself from the investigation like Sessions did, which would, you know, if he were to do that, that would cause Trump to, you know, have an aneurysm, I would imagine. But it is the case that Whitaker was the campaign chair for Sam Clovis. He's a witness in the investigation before the grand jury. So I think Whitaker's ties to him make it difficult, and his CNN op-ed, you know, when he said that the scope of the investigation should not include Trump's finances. Mm. I think he's going to come under pressure to recuse himself. Whether he does or not is a different question. Whether Trump has discussed this with Whitaker before the appointment is also an interesting question, because that in itself is evidence.
Yes. So Trump may have committed obstruction of justice even in what he's done in the last day.
Exactly.
Oh, gee. Well, in fact, speaking of obstruction of justice, there was a bit of speculation before the midterms that Robert Mueller may be finished his report on obstruction of justice and whether or not he thinks the president has committed that. And it may be ready for release once the midterms were over. Emma, do you think in this new environment with the new Congress on the way in a couple of months, but also with an acting Attorney General, do you think it's time for Robert Mueller to dump something like that into the public domain, or should he keep holding his cards close as he has been?
Look, I think, I mean, I'm obviously speculating, but I think Mueller probably would have prepared for several eventualities in terms of the result of the midterms. And he, as we know, he's kind of gone quiet over the last month or two precisely because of the midterms. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's got something ready to drop in this kind of interim period before Congress is in session in January. So I wouldn't be surprised if he drops something kind of fairly soon, because as we've talked about before, I think Mueller has prepared for the eventuality that he is sacked, and I think he'll have a strategy in place ready for that, because he, I don't imagine, will want this investigation to disappear or to go to waste. So I think we can expect something from him. And look, he'll have support from Congress. He'll have support from those House committees that Democrats now have control of. So he may have sort of bought himself some time there, because it's going to be messy, and I think getting rid of him will be difficult. So I think he's got a bit of room to manoeuvre still.
I'm not so sure. I think Mueller was very cognizant of the idea that he didn't want to be seen to be impacting the outcome of the midterms, or, you know, interfering with the election process. But beyond that, I think he's probably being guided more by the rhythm of the investigation than any political concerns. So I don't know. I mean, if there's an indictment ready for Donald Trump Jr., I think he's more free to hand it down now than he was before Tuesday, before the midterms. But I'm not sure that will completely dictate, the politics will dictate the timing of that.
Right. As for when the Democrats take control of the House and get that subpoena power, they've already started talking about, you know, what they might do. They're thinking about, you know, getting a hold of Trump's tax returns after all this time and pursuing various other avenues of investigation. Do you think that the election yesterday makes Robert Mueller a little bit less relevant?
I don't know about less relevant. It certainly adds to the mix, and it'll mean that this becomes a lot more public. So these committees, I think, will make efforts to hold public hearings, hearings that are open to the public as opposed to closed sessions. And they will be, I think, as we just heard, you know, Mueller is sort of conscious of the politics and appearing not to... not appearing to influence politics, the congressional committees will not feel that way. They have precisely the opposite reaction, I think. So I think we'll see this kind of adding to the mix. We'll see a lot more subpoenas, I think, coming at the White House from all different directions. We'll see a White House kind of under siege, and the Mueller investigation, I think, you know, assuming he doesn't get fired immediately, will just kind of chug along and add things into the mix. So I think things will probably get crazier before they calm down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting, you know, the way that this has played out with everything mainly being done behind closed doors with the occasional indictment is very different to the way that other investigations have taken place in the past. During Watergate, most of the big revelations were made in open session in the Senate because the other party had control. Andrew, do you think that Robert Mueller will play a bit of a backseat role to the spectacle that is on the way from the House of Reps?
I think to some degree, yes. But Mueller's final report, I mean, we still don't really know if that's going to be completely public or if some of it's going to be privileged. But I think his report is always going to carry more weight than any partisan report from the House of Representatives, right? The Democrat-controlled House of Representatives. But I think it will take a back role in the sense of the theater of the politics of Washington, because, I mean, if you looked on the list of things that the Democrats can now ask for information about or demand information about, you know, Trump's secure communications, his use of a private cell phone, you know, payments to Stormy Daniels, family separations at the border, Hurricane Maria, and did the government deliberately understate the death toll in Puerto Rico? You know, the Kushner's ethics problems. There's a bunch of cabinet ministers who have dodgy business dealings that are going to be investigated. I think, like, to be perfectly frank, and I hope this doesn't put anybody off their cereal, but I think it's gonna feel like a 2-year colonoscopy for Trump. You know?
Look, I actually haven't had breakfast yet, so, you know, thanks for that, Andrew. It's interesting to see what will happen here, though, because, you know, in the previous administration, in the Obama administration, the subpoenas were raining down on the White House constantly. There were hearings into everything from Benghazi to Hillary Clinton's emails and anything that they could really find. And yet none of that really produced, you know, any concrete indictments or jailings or anything like that. Do you see that it might end differently in this case, Emma?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things going on there. I think in the case of the Obama administration, nothing came out of those investigations, to put it bluntly, because there was nothing there, right? I guess I'd also say to that, the Obama administration had strong, intelligent, hardworking people there who were capable of dealing with these kind of investigations. And I'm just not sure that the same applies to the Trump administration. There are still lots of positions that haven't been filled, people are leaving all the time, the place is leaking like a sieve. So I'm just not sure that they're actually equipped to deal with these kind of investigations, to keep batting back the subpoenas and that kind of thing. And then, I guess I'd return to my earlier point to say that, I mean, we kind of already know that there is something here. There is something to investigate. And I would be extremely surprised if the investigation doesn't find kind of multiple incidences of wrongdoing. I mean, we've already had revelations that in kind of normal times would have brought down a president. But I think, you know, there is a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff for these House committees to investigate, and they should investigate. They should be throwing out these subpoenas. I think it's really important that they do. And I mean, as much as they'll be seen as partisan, like, that is the job of these elected representatives. That's what they're there to do.
I think that's 100% right. I mean, just look at the ledger. You've got the president's campaign manager or campaign chair, the deputy campaign chair, his national security advisor, a foreign policy advisor. These people have all been indicted already. This is not hypothetical. They carried out crimes, and some of them have admitted to doing so.
If Robert Mueller is fired in the next 2 months or, you know, whenever, before the Democrats take control of the lower house, Andrew, will his files just end up with the Democrats anyway? Or, you know, is there something preventing the Democrats from just subpoenaing everything that he's ever worked on and just starting it up again?
Yeah, so, I mean, already you see this morning The representative Nadler, who's very likely going to be the head of the Judiciary Committee, has written a letter to everybody at the Justice Department, basically, requesting that they do not destroy any documents, between now and January. So they're already trying to safeguard this. But I also think that we shouldn't underestimate Mueller. This guy's been around Washington for a very long time. It's not like he didn't see this coming. He probably has some kind of, he's put stops in place and he's put safeguards in place to make sure that eventually the truth come out.
Maybe Robert Mueller's buried all his documents in a big chest under a specific tree that we need to dig up.
I think it's the nuclear option for Mueller for sure. He'd rather things go smoothly and according to the rule book for his team.
Andrew, observing the campaign for the midterms, how much of a role do you think the investigation into Donald Trump's campaign and Russia, how much of a role do you think that played in people's minds leading into this election?
I don't know that anybody voted on the basis of Russia per se, although, you've seen Dana Rohrabacher lose his seat in California. So
Dana Rohrabacher is a congressman who is well known to be very fond of Russia and Vladimir Putin.
And more importantly, Russia very fond of him. So he looks like he's lost his seat last I saw. And so I think people perhaps in some parts of the country voted with that in mind. But I think it kind of added to the more general malaise and the general sense of this administration being slightly dodgy. And I think that could have been detrimental to Trump in places like the Midwest and some of the swing states like Ohio and Michigan that actually voted for Trump but broke for the Democrats this time around.
Emma, the Democrats very assiduously avoided talking about impeachment during the campaign, and they're still not talking about it very much now after the election, although Donald Trump was talking about it a little bit overnight.
We didn't talk about impeaching. We didn't talk about, what do? Do you impeach somebody because he created the greatest economic success in the history of our country? Let's impeach him because the country is so successful. Let's impeach him. Has he done anything wrong? They asked somebody. Has he done anything wrong? No, but let's impeach him anyway. So let's impeach the president, and then we'll impeach the vice president. These people are sick.
Is there a reason why they're avoiding talking about this? Is it an unpopular idea that the president would be impeached?
I think it's a deliberate political strategy on the part of Democrats, not necessarily because it's unpopular, but because I think that kind of narrative of impeachment actually plays into Trump's hands a little better than it does the Democrats. It kind of feeds his narrative about being under siege, about witch hunts, about people kind of unfairly being out to get him. So I think Democrats are kind of cognizant of that, of not feeding that narrative of going after Trump more on a kind of policy basis. And that's connected, I think, to what Andrew was just saying about how much these investigations influence people's voting decisions. And polling kind of increasingly suggests that, as Andrew said, it is important. It kind of feeds into this idea about the corruption of the Trump administration. But actually, other issues are kind of more important in deciding votes. Issues like healthcare, which doesn't get a lot of coverage here, but is very important in people's minds. And also political violence, so the shooting at the synagogue in Pittsburgh, for example. So I think Democrats are very deliberately focusing on that rather than impeachment.
Donald Trump talked a lot overnight about Republicans who refused to embrace him.
Mike Kaufman. Too bad, Mike. Mia Love. But Mia Love gave me no love. And she lost. Too bad. Sorry about that, Mia.
He's making the point that Republicans who aren't loyal to him are going to be punished at the polls. Do you think that has made the Republican Party more in his thrall than it was previously?
Look, I think there's two things here. One, the people who are worried about a primary challenger running against them from the right, supported by Trump, are still going to be worried about that. And that's particularly effective coercion for House members who are up for re-election every 2 years. But I think you have to imagine now in the Senate, the people who were just elected are going to be serving a six-year term. So when they run again, they're not going to be running with the threat of Trump over them. Trumpism may survive in some kind of form, But it's unlikely that he's still going to be there by the time they vote. This is all to say that they have some freedom. They have more political maneuver than they might have. They're not quite so in hock to Trump as they would have been. I don't think that impeachment is likely unless Mueller or other investigations show that Trump has committed a high crime and misdemeanor. At the moment, we're not there. I think Nancy Pelosi, the probable next Speaker of the House, when she talks about not impeaching unless there's bipartisan support, I think that's she's being honest.
Emma, we've seen, you know, the first shakeup of the cabinet following the midterm elections. As you mentioned, the staff turnover at the White House is rather rapid. We've seen the UN ambassador jump ship. Do you expect that we're going to see more changes in the next few days after this, you know, big result in the midterms?
Oh, look, far be it from me to predict that. I mean, history—the short history of the Trump administration suggests to us that absolutely, yes, there will be more movement. And I think Andrew's right. If we kind of see more indictments coming from Mueller, if we see more the House committees kind of issuing subpoenas, I wouldn't be surprised if a few more people disappear. And that will make it particularly difficult for Trump and the White House because those positions seem to be becoming increasingly difficult to replace. I think, you know, the kind of more politically savvy people are seeing the writing on the wall and deciding to get out while they can. So that will make things pretty difficult for Trump. And we'll see, I think, again, you know, similarly with the Attorney General, we'll see Trump try and appoint people who are more and more loyal, who he feels assured will support him. But I guess I just kind of go back to say that I'm not convinced that there is a kind of red line that Republicans will draw for Trump. We keep expecting there to be a red line. We keep expecting him to have crossed it with this or that. And he just hasn't. So, you know, maybe people will stick around. And I think, you know, Trump's already, he's talking about 2020. He talked about it in the press conference not that long ago. So I think he thinks he's running. So, yeah, look, I think we will see a lot of turnover. We'll see new faces, but we might see some faces sticking around too.
Andrew, the president is trying to spin this as a success for him, the outcome of the election. And I've been trying to get my head around how that could be the case. And this is what I've got so far. Indulge me for a moment. Donald Trump now has the ability to appoint whoever he wants to his cabinet by getting them through the Senate without too much difficulty. He can appoint judges, which is one of the things that makes him most popular with the Republican base. And he now has, in the Democrats, someone to blame for stagnation of his agenda. The Democrats now have control of the House. He can say, oh, yeah, well, the wall, I wanted to build the wall, but they stopped me. You need to vote me in again and I'll have another go in 2020. Is there some way that this result in the midterms could be seen as a good thing for Donald Trump? Or am I drawing too long a bow there?
No, I think everything you just said is true. Look, there's no doubt that the White House sees this as an opportunity to have a foil, and Trump is never more happy than when he's got a foil. But for me personally, I think it's overstated. I think the idea that the Congress is going to be the impediment for a legislative agenda that never really existed, I think people will see through that one. I think also that this Congress is going to highlight the corruption and nepotism and dodgy dealings that go on inside the administration, which perhaps haven't got that much attention because of Trump's behavior more broadly. And I think that argument is perhaps more compelling to voters that, you know, Trump is wasting taxpayers' money, that he's corrupt, that he hires absolutely terrible people. I think going to the polls in 2020, that might be more compelling than anything to do with Russia or Trump's demeanor.
Do you think Andrew's right there, Emma, that, you know, the other things that the Democrats may be able to investigate might be more interesting to the voter in 2020 than Russia?
I think that's entirely possible. I think Andrew's right. I think, you know, the things that have kind of fallen by the wayside because of the midterms, things like we mentioned earlier, Jared Kushner's connection to the Saudis, the link there that, you know, House committees might start investigating.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I forgot about that one.
So, you know, and there's lots of things like that we've forgotten about. Lots of kind of other departments like the Environmental Protection Agency that's kind of rife with corruption but is receiving little attention. So I think those kind of issues may take the fore. But, I mean, I guess I'd also say to that, you know, Trump's very, very good at controlling the media cycle and spinning the narrative to suit him. We saw that in the midterms. We saw things like the Russia investigation be completely overshadowed by this kind of story around this migrant caravan and the invasion. So the narrative of the midterms kind of got completely taken over by that. Trump is very good at that. He's very good at changing and switching the narrative. And I, so far, at least, I think Democrats haven't had the space to be able to kind of counter that. They will get more space because of these committees. They will be able to control the narrative a bit more by issuing subpoenas, by forcing Trump into the courts and that kind of thing. But I don't, you know, I think it will probably just kind of cement this perception about deep, insurmountable divisions in Washington and a kind of perception that both sides are so partisan that kind of nothing is real and you can't trust anything. So I'm not sure that anything will change radically in that way. The subject matter may change, but the general narrative, I expect, will kind of stay pretty familiar to what we've seen in the last couple of years.
All right. It has been a fascinating 24 hours. Thank you so much to both of you for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Emma Shortis is a research officer at the RMIT EU Centre, and Andrew Beattie is news editor for Agence France-Presse in Australia and a former White House correspondent. We'll be back again when news breaks on any of these issues. I'm Matt Bevan. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listener.